You're listening to Rafael Skeet on the Caribbean Radio Show with sports, chat, and more.
Hey, good evening, good evening, good evening. Good to be back this week, man. We're back and ready to go. We're going to have a great program for you today, man. We're going to be waiting for Mr. Benny Castillo. We're going to be in talking a little bit about what he does in Florida. He has a Breeze baseball academy. He also do a lot more for the Caribbean island and the Puerto Rico, St. Lucia. We're going to let him talk to us more a little bit about what he's doing. We also have a little lessons that I'm confused about. And so it's beyond sports. We're actually going to go a little bit in the Caribbean islands, on the island of St. Martin, and we're going to talk a little bit to Miss Rhoda Arendelle. Hopefully we can get Mr. Fabian Badejo, Lasana M. Sapu to enlighten not just me, but everybody in the Caribbean about the Concordia agreement between the French and the Dutch. Growing up on the islands, I was more of a jock, so that didn't come to light for me. But after a while, as I got older, I started learning about it, and the more I learn, the less I know. We know that this agreement was actually in, I think it was 1848, if I'm not mistaken, is when this agreement came about. So it's been a long time that this has been something that's going on. But I think that we have three of the greatest minds. Even if we just get one of them, I think we'll be elated knowing we can ask the right questions on this whole thing about the Concordia. Waiting for my buddy Dixon to show up, as well as my co-host Tony Holton, should be on very shortly. We're going to get scores, highlights from Dixon. He's going to give us a little bit of the final four is set. So we're waiting tonight to find out who the final four of the female NCAA female going to be. We're waiting on that as well. I think right now we have LSU will be playing Iowa State. So we're waiting on a lot of things, a lot going on. And that's, when we say sports chat and more, we mean sports chat and more. So we just don't just sit and talk about what's going on in the U.S. We talk about what's going on in the Caribbean. Like I said, last week and the week before, we talked a little about the Haiti situation. Actually, the week before, because last week we didn't have the pleasure to have the company of Miss Rhoda Arendelle last week, because she learned the passing of her mom. And, we know she's doing pretty good right now, and they haven't buried her as yet, but she's willing to come on still and have a conversation. And I think somehow we're still going to have a little conversation to her about how she's doing and how everything is going. We're waiting for Tony to walk in, for Dixon to walk in, and then we're going to get going. Next week, we're going to have another brilliant baseball player. His name is Carl Nichols. Carl Nichols was a catcher, major league catcher for Baltimore Orioles and I think Houston, Texas. Also was a teammate of mine, very calm, quiet. I think he's one of those guys when something comes out of his mouth, you kind of like believe what he says, because he doesn't do a whole lot of hoopla, but he work hard and show you more than he can tell you. So we're going to have him next week. We're planning to have one more guest next week. I'm not sure who it is, but we're trying to also get Texas Southern head coach, female basketball head coach. Tonight would have been a perfect night to get her talking to us about the Final Four and how her program. She's in her second year with the Texas Southern. I think her first year went slow. This year she did a lot better. And I think they start buying into her program. I think that's the main thing, is when you have athletes and you're coaching or managing a team, and the players start buying into your program and buying into your philosophy. I think that's one of the things that you have to actually start dealing with. So once they start buying into it, it's going to be a good program. She's very well represented herself She's been assistant coaches some of the big Division I schools, and I know for a fact that she'll be a good person to speak with, find out what's going on in the world of basketball. It would have been beautiful. I'm looking at I think we got a little score right now with the LSU and the Iowa Hawkeyes. It's 43 Iowa and 41 LSU. They are actually in about 40 seconds left into the first half of the game. So, again, we're just sitting here, and we're going to make sure we update anybody who's interested. We try to make sure that at this program, we try to get everybody enlightened of what's going on out there. We have sports. We do sports all over the world, Caribbean, U.S. We're trying to get involved in trying to get someone who know, you know, the netball and the cricket and all that stuff in the Caribbean. We get a person that can do that, then we'll be able to hit every angle of all the sports. And then once we get through the sports, we go along with the what you call and more. And more is going to be our and more today. At 8:30, we're going to have Benny Castillo. Benny Castillo is going to come on and have a conversation with him. We're going to pick his brain. We're going to talk a little bit about what he's doing. You know, of course, we always want to know who they are, what got him to the point of why he's doing what he's doing. So we're going to be dealing with it at 8:30. About 5 minutes, my co-host is going to be coming on. We're going to have Dixon going to be coming and giving some score. We're at halftime right now with the Iowa and LSU. Iowa is up 43 to 41. Good game going on. And we also have the Final Four. The people that are interested in basketball, we have the Final Four set for the men. Final Four. I'm telling you, I'm going with Connecticut. Connecticut is actually playing like an NBA team. They're coached like an NBA team. So you got Connecticut. You have Connecticut, UConn. You have Purdue, South Carolina, and I'm not sure the other. I would look it up. Dixon will have all that stuff for me. I've been doing a whole lot of stuff. But one of the things we are interested in is to have a conversation again about the Concordia, which is about the St. Martin treaty with the Dutch and French. And I was talking to a friend of mine, man, and he was he was actually talking about what if, you know, the what ifs. And I don't do a lot of what ifs, but what if the French side tell the Dutch side they can't come on that side, or the Dutch side. I think that's what the treaty was for. But the way things are going right now, we have so much things going on where one side is not. I put it this way, and again, I'm just talking out of what I feel, my personal opinion, that I think number one, we should be all independent. All the islands should be independent. I think all the islands should stand on its own. My mother always say, every cup has to stand on its own bottom. And I think this way, I think St. Martin, especially St. Martin, where I'm from, when disaster hit, this is when St. Martin is at a weak point, where you have the Dutch will come in and say, we'll give you X, Y, Z, but you have to give us this back. And I think it's almost like saying, you know, I'm going to my father to ask for something, and he's, instead of him saying, son, help, here we go, I know you need it, he will actually say, if I give you this, you're going to have to give me this in return. And I don't think that the people of St. Martin deserve that, because it actually makes the island weaker. It doesn't strengthen the island, because I haven't been in St. Martin, lived in St. Martin for a long time, but like I say, you take me out of St. Martin, but you can't take Martin out of me. And I look at when they had the hurricane, the last hurricane they had, I can't remember the name, I think I'm going to ask Rhoda to help me out with the name of the hurricane. But when that happened, I mean, the airplanes were leaving St. Martin like crazy. People were going back to Holland. They're going here. They're going back there. Even your own island people was going back to the island place, you know. So it's like what it is that you're saying, that you you know, you have to do these things. And when bad things hit, or when something hit like a hurricane, everybody leaves the island. I mean, that to me is not the way it should work. We have my co-host walking in the door right now. We're going to pause for a second. If you guys want to call him, man, give us a call at 661-467-2407. That's 661-467-2407. Right back in this little intro, we'll have Tony introduce himself.
You're listening to Rafael Skeet on the Caribbean Radio Show with sports, chat, and more.
Look who's here, Tony Holton. What's up, Tony? What's going on today, man?
Hey, my guy. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. I'm just sitting here. I was trying to kill some time to have you come on. You know, I'm like a one-legged man until you show up. So now I'm feeling good now. We can come a little bit. I was telling before you start, I was telling me at 8:30 we're gonna have Benny Castillo. Benny Castillo runs a baseball academy. Not academy. Well, it's academy. He doesn't have teams, but he just have a academy. He's a guy from the DR, got signed as a professional a baseball player from New York. And he's been in baseball for a while, and we're going to have him on, have a conversation for him, and then talk, see what he's doing, what he's got going on. So that's about it. Then I'm waiting for Dixon. Man, Dixon, hopefully he's doing good, man. Dixon, I call him SAT, and I was, you know, trying to see you. Usually he'll always either text me back or call me back, and then he told me, man, he told me he had to go to the hospital for emergency operation.
Oh, wow.
You know, so, yeah. Oh, wow. But he was on his fingers, but he's doing, you know, he's doing pretty good today. He said he might slip in, get some highlight. I was telling our folks that we're gonna have a great program. We're gonna have some good things happening. So what's going on with you today, man?
Man, hey, nothing much, man. First and foremost, man, thanks for having me. And man, let's send some prayers up to Dixon as well, man. I hope all things are good with him. But overall, man, just enjoying, you know, baseball is in, man. So I've been just, you know, catching up with these games, you know, seeing our Atlanta Braves, you know, get a quick victory, you know, against the Chicago White Sox, as expected. But, you know, overall, man, just enjoying these days. And right now, you know, with the academy, all the guys are on spring break. So, you know, it's just having that time to kind of like mellow down and enjoy some good baseball, some good weather for once. Man, that's the goal, you know. So yeah, man. And then I had to catch up with my guy, Rafael, man. So overall, I know I chimed in a little earlier. I know you was talking about on the islands. I couldn't catch all of it, man. Well, could you update me with that as well?
Well, we're going to get back to that probably around maybe 8:45 or so. But it's one of the things where, you know, in the islands, it's, you know, you always, when you grew up with either England, Holland, mm-hmm. or France, just like the United States are with the Virgin Islands. But it's a treaty that they had, I think, in the 1800s with the French and the Dutch made a treaty. And you know, I am one of those guys, man. I don't like the way that the Caribbean, you know, is the word I'm trying to use right now, I know what the word is, but it's hard for me to bring it up. But I sure, when I have them on earlier, I mean, later on, they'll bring it up to par. But it's one of those things where I think all the islands should be pretend, man. I mean, you know, this is how it works, T, and this is how my understanding. And when they come on later, they'll probably tell me, yes, I'm right or I'm wrong. But this is how I see it.
Okay.
If you are an island and you are supposed to be Holland, that's over the island, like the U.S. over the Virgin Islands, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I go to some tragedy and I have some stuff going on, I should be able to come to you, because the way it's written, I can't even go to the U.S. or I can't go to France, even if I'm Dutch, to ask for any help. Mm-hmm. I have to go to them, to the Dutch, to ask for help. So if I have to come to you and I can't go to anybody else, why does it have to be alone with stipulations? You know, so right now, if you go to the down to the islands, you hardly you would see. It used to be, 90%, 95% owned island police people. When I had when I was growing up, the police guys were neighborhood guys, you know. So
yeah.
The crime wasn't there, you know. Wasn't like you know, because it was like a village raise your family. You understand what I'm saying? And
yeah.
So the police officers, man, if they come to you and say, "Hey, T. Tony, man, come on, you know better than that." It's like your brother, your cousin, your neighbor talking to you.
Yeah.
But now
yeah,
you have almost
you.
Yeah, you have 60% of people from Europe policing the Caribbean folks. They don't care.
Yeah.
So the respect factor is not where it's supposed to be. It's all about respect. My coach, who I always talk about, who I say was like my second dad, was the chief of the major police on the island, you know. And so he was always around us. I mean, he would everything we do, he did. You don't get that anymore. Even now in the islands, you don't even get people that you grew up with. T, you get people from different islands. I remember back there, if somebody go to St. Martin and looking for the Skeets family, they can go and say, "Hey, I'm looking for the Skeets family." A taxi driver will say, "Oh, I know," and take that guy directly to a home. You can't even do that. As small as the island, you can't do that anymore because there's no the love, the passion that you used to have growing up is new people now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You got a guy in 4 years, got 2 years, they don't know each other. And so it's kind of really different. When you, I mean, it's really weird. It's like your neighborhood. When you grew up, you know everybody know who Mr. and Mrs. Houghton Boy. That's Mr. Houghton Boy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And then when you
and I didn't mean to cut you off too.
Go ahead.
And you hit it right on the nail, man. You can receive it so much better when you have those familiar faces and stuff like that, man. Because you know before I was on this earth. My dad, he was in the police force, and you know I had you know guys that were older, you know, grew up around the neighborhood. They would tell me, man, like, hey, your pops, he did a lot of good for us, man. You know, when we was out being bad, whatever, it was situations where he knew our parents. You know, he'd threaten us and let us know that you know he's gonna let their parents know and stuff like that. It's just more in tune, you know. Because I wouldn't say it's more lenient, but it's more so like, hey, get right, man. Because at the end of the day, I know where your parents are. I know, you know, the people that can really, you know, humble you in a beneficial way. You know, so having those people in tune with family, man, that's major, man. You know, so I definitely understand.
Exactly, and it's true. It really make a difference because when your pops go to those guys, they also don't want to. Disrespect him because he's almost like an uncle in the neighborhood. So they're not going to say anything to disrespect him, you know. But then when you start coming around guys who you don't know their interest in you, so you don't care. You know, I'm telling you, I know when I used to do my little, I was a bad little boy. I could admit that. I was a bad little boy. I was mischievous. But you know what? They go to my coach, which was Major Brown, his name was, and he'll come to me. Directly, no matter what time of day, he called me outside. My dad would say, "Hey, Major, out there to talk to you," you know. And I go outside talk to him. And I'm not afraid to go to jail, but I'm afraid of what he's gonna say. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The reprimand. Mm-hmm. Like I know better of you, man. You know, you got to do better. Well, that's why I and our kids that we have in our academy, I always tell them, you know, you represent your family and you represent yourself and your family because when you do something outside, they're going to say the kid from the Savage organization. So now you bring everybody in instead of, they're not going to say Joey from Joey. No, they're going to say the Savage guy. And the same thing with you and I. We also have to know how we carry ourselves as coaches as well because we represent them. It's one of those things where you just got to be that kind of person to represent everybody. You know what I'm saying? So that's what it is. Yeah. So give me a second, T. I got somebody is online to find out who we talking with because, you know, I don't – name's not up. It's just the number. So let me see who we talking to. But Carlo, go ahead. Who am I speaking with?
Hello?
Yeah. Oh, this
hello
sound like – this sound like some – Benny. Is it Benny?
Nah, what's going on, fellas? This is Coach Jacob. from JIA.
Hey, Jack, how you doing, sir?
Hey.
Hey, man, I'm wonderful. How you guys doing, man?
I'm doing,
doing well.
That's
tell
what's
us
up,
about
man.
What's going on. Tell us about what you got going on, man. We're listening.
Oh, man, this is Coach Jacob, man, from JIA, the Jacob Institute of Athletics. JIA is a homeschool, it's a micro school for homeschooled students and independent free agent players. So I get a lot of high school kids that that might have got cut from their team for whatever reason, whether it be politics, definitely not GPA, because you got to keep a good GPA to go to JIA. Because our job is to help you get to the next level. So we can't do that if you're just slacking on your schoolwork. Education always first. And I'm a teacher, so you know I'm education first.
Tell me what area you're talking about first. What area, where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm sorry, what you said, buddy?
I said I'm listening to you and I hear you, but what area, where are you calling from? Where you work out of?
Orlando, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Yes, Orlando, Florida. Yep, been here. I've the past 5 years I was the director at the Saints Academy Private Christian School, and this year here is the inaugural season for JIA.
What do you think the problem is with some of the kids that you said that's getting cut? What are you doing for them? In the meanwhile,
well, the problem I see with a lot of the kids is their ego. Their ego is a lot bigger than what their talent is. Sometimes these kids come in and they think that they know more than the coaches know, and it's sad. So we try first we explain to them. You know what I'm saying? A lot of them be out of shape. A lot of the kids be out of shape. So before we even touch the baseball, I get them running, start working on their agility and their conditioning because they really are out of shape. They're really out of shape. And I don't know why people feel that baseball players shouldn't work out. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, we athletes. So that should be one of the main, most important things. But, you know, a lot of times they want to just play games, and without putting the work in. And I tell all my players, you're going to do 10 hours of work and you're going to play the game for about an hour, 45 minutes, 2 hours. So, you know,
Coach, you hit it right on the nail, man. Coach Ski and I was just talking about that, man. And honestly, we feel like with the mindset of just thinking it's given, like they think a lot of these kids nowadays feel like it's given, man. You got to earn this position. You got to earn that role. And we feel like a lot of that is built up from the household, these parents, man. I know we've ran into situations where, you know, parents, you know, are, I hate to say it at times, but sometimes they're in denial of the ability of what their kid is actually doing. And when it comes to that, you know, I just feel like a lot of that is taught through the home. I feel like, man, if your child is doing this thing, balling, putting the work in, hey, be honest and open. Okay, when they slack, be open and honest. But overall, I feel like a lot of that is built inside the home of, like, just telling these kids, you know, keeping them uplifted. But at the same time, it's like you're not being realistic. What is this kid doing outside of practice? What is he doing once he gets home? Like, what is his mindset? How dedicated to the game are they actually? A lot of it plays case. Yes, exactly. So it plays its course, you know. So when you mention a lot of these kids coming in with higher expectations than what they're actually bringing, man, you hit it right there, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. It's sad. I just, you know, I don't even know if these kids watch baseball anymore, man. I know when I was coming up, man, I was in front of the TV, man, for the games. You know what I'm saying? I was watching all the baseball games. You know what I'm saying? Switching channels for games.
Yeah.
Going between Major League and then Little League baseball games and, you know, just watching it, you know? And I don't know if they do that nowadays, man.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They pick out one player and focus on that one player, but they're not And they focusing on positions and not just being good baseball players. I've been trying to get them to be good baseball players, not position players, because I tell them, when you leave me and you get out of high school, you don't know where they're going to put you. You don't know where they're going to put you. So learn positions. Wherever you at, on the pitch, you got to catch and you got to throw. So learn baseball.
Coach, what it is about ability. And a lot of kids have to be, sometimes you got to bring them down to that level, let them know you are not that guy. Because none of us, if you look at these guys in the major leagues, none of them woke up and become stars. You have to start somewhere. And if you think you can wake up and just become that guy, then you're making a big mistake. So a lot of times these kids have to be bring down to that level of saying to them, listen, man, you are not that guy, you know, because you look at it. We had a scrimmage with our 13U had a scrimmage with another 13U, and if you really look at both teams, they were two different teams. You know, they got coaching. We coach them. They coach them. But when they meet together on the same field, you could see the difference of the caliber of the coaching that they got. What I am saying to say this. Is that you're going to be humiliated. You're going to humiliate yourself when you face guys who are so much better than you are, same age, and you're going to wonder why they're that much better than you are. You know why? Because they put the work in, and you didn't.
Absolutely.
They put it takes to get to that level. You didn't. So the thing is that sometimes they have to wake up themselves. When you put them in that position, they're going to go, wait a minute, I'm not that good. You're right. You're not that good. You think you are, but you're not.
You're not, yeah, exactly. And I don't know. So what do you say, like, when you have a kid that comes in and he feels that he's on that level, but the humble kids, those be the kids that the coachable ones, those be the ones that be the diamonds in the rough, you know?
Yeah.
They be the diamond in the rough. You know, I got a couple of them. They don't have the confidence, but I can see they have the talent. You know what I'm saying?
The main thing is that you got to let them know that nothing is given. You don't earn any. You got to earn it. Nothing is given to you. So sometimes you may have a kid that doesn't have the talent that the other kid have that thinks he's so talented, but can't do the things that you ask him to do, simple things on the baseball field. So you know what? You can't go out there. I prefer, as a coach, and myself and Tony, we coach together. And as a coach, I would lose a game to prove a point to you than to win a game and give you the satisfaction. So sometimes you got to humble these kids and let these kids sit and say, wait, what I do? You're not doing what I want you to do. I'm the coach. You're not. Don't come in here thinking that you – see, you don't run the program. The program is the one ran itself. So if one player can't do it, I can get another player. That the program's going to go on. So you got to humble those kids and let them know that the program is bigger than them. They're not bigger than the program.
Absolutely. And at the same time, I was letting them know that they are a part of it, and they're making history. You know, they are making history, but, you know, it ain't nobody bigger than the sport, man. So – I understand exactly where you're coming from. I appreciate it.
Yeah, when you say history, history is his story. His story. Can you make your own story to become something? See, I don't want to put it in you. You got to put it in yourself. You know, you have to put that in yourself. As a coach, man, listen, I and Tony and I say the same thing. If I got 15 guys and I got one or two guys that are taking my attention from the other 12, I don't want that two. I want to take the attention and put it on the 12 that are willing to work. That one or two guys, man, you can go. But I guarantee if you give them that feeling as if you don't run the program, they'll come around. Tony, am I saying something crazy?
No, you're on it. And the thing is, too, you sit back and realize that a lot of these kids, man, the ones that are actually open and willing to learn, that are actual students of the game, even if they're okay players, those are, like you said earlier, Coach, diamonds in the rough, you know. and we were true testimonies to that, man. We had a few guys, man, when they first stepped on the field, man, it was, you could see the want to, but they didn't know how. You know, maybe because of previous coaching, you know, that they might have had that, you know, that coach might have belittled them or talked down or just didn't have it, you know, or they couldn't receive it well. You know, we were able to turn those guys into straight satellite. They was actually out there living the name, because our team is the Savage, right? So they were actually living by that name. I'm talking about guys that, you know, struggled early on in the season, the start of the season. These are the guys that are showing up, you know? And like you said earlier, it hit it right there, man. When the kid is coachable and they're willing to learn and actual students of the game, you know, like I was telling Coach Skeet the other day, man, when I grew up, like my baseball bat, my glove, man, I went to sleep with those at night because those were like a piece of me, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's different, you know?
I thought I was the only one, man.
when you love something and you care about it, man, you will value it that much, you know?
For real.
And I feel like this era, we have athletes, don't get me wrong, but so much stuff has diluted the game. You technology, you got Insta, you got all this different stuff that's diluting the real workhorses, you know? They even got the virtuals where you can put the thing on your face and it's like you're in the actual game and you're swinging, you know? But what is that compared to you actually out there putting that work in, you know? So, it's different.
And one point before I go, I just wanted to make. A lot of times these kids, they make excuses for working out because they don't have any friends that play baseball, and they don't have money for the cages and all this. When I was coming up, man, I didn't know about a batting cage, man. I didn't know about no batting cage. All I knew about was me getting out there some way. Somebody going to throw the ball at me, or I'm going to throw it off the wall.
Like,
man, we went out there and played the game. You know what I'm saying? And I tell these kids, there's so many drills that you can do by yourself to enhance your game. Because that's how I learned, just playing by myself, just learning, man, just imagining and using my imagination. And it worked, man. You know, it worked. You know, I wound up being an MVP. You know what I'm saying? It was in a 1985 Little League, whatever. I did it. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? It wasn't the major league, but it was a major league, a West Highway Little League. But you gotta motivate yourself. You motivate yourself and get to that next level. You know, so that's why I'm just trying to get them to understand. Absolutely, man. But you guys, man, I appreciate what y'all doing, man. You know what I'm saying? And topics like this need to be spoken, especially amongst our people, because so many of us love the sport of baseball, man, and it's just being overshadowed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you're
right, man.
That's why we have this platform, man, is to bring any and everybody that can have a voice to voice how they feel about the sport, and not just baseball, any sport. You know what I'm saying? Appreciate you, man.
Absolutely.
And if you just go to thesavageacademy.com, man, you'll get in touch with myself or Tony anytime. So just stay in touch with us, man. And don't be a stranger. Don't be a stranger to our program.
Yes, sir, man.
No,
we appreciate you.
Absolutely not. Appreciate you guys too, man. God bless you. And have a wonderful spring and summer season, man.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You, man.
We appreciate you, man.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Blessing.
And you know, he's right. But you see, it boils down to a lot of times, we allow kids to determine how they want to run the program rather than we as coaches tell them this is how we run our program and this is what we do.
Yeah.
So you got to be a part of it this way, you know. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you said exactly what you say, and it's about, you know, you just gotta work hard. You got, as coaches, we put the work in. We put the work in for ourselves, and all we want to let them know now, this is where we've been. This is what we work for. And if you want even a drink of coffee of what we had, this is what it takes to get there.
Yeah, yeah. And also, man, like I touched base on it earlier, I really feel like it's what's being taught. You know, when you're around something, and for example, like we talk about, Coach, if you go through life and you go through ups and downs, and you always have that crutch to hold you up, you get dependent on that crutch after a while. And I just feel like a lot of these parents are the crutches to these kids when it comes to holding accountability. You know what I'm saying? So I just feel like holding accountability, it has to be something that's more done nowadays. Because like he said earlier, man, like Coach said, man, he was pretty much said, you know, a lot of these kids make excuses. And it's like, man, I couldn't help it rung a bell, man, because that's all I hear when they don't show up or when they don't rise to the occasion. You know, when you fail, you got to learn how to take that accountability so you can be prepared for that next go round. And I just feel like, man, it needs to be taught in the home more, holding accountability. When these guys get a certain age, they have to learn how to progress in this game and in life as a man, and learning how to move as a man, as a young man. You know, because the game is based off of failure. If you can't handle failure and know how to pick yourself up when you fail, it's going to be tough for you, man. It's going to be tough.
And when I listen to what Coach was saying, too, I mean, he got kids that's high school kids that, you know, they didn't make it. Like he said, they didn't make it to the high school. They got cut from the high school team for whatever reason.
Yeah.
When he seen them, he should know the reason now why he got cut.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I think he just need help. He need help. I think he's doing
a
great job. Work these kids, but you're gonna need that extra help to get you going, man. Yeah. And like I said, if you listen, Coach Jackson, hey, reach out to us, man. You know, we're here for you. That's what we're here for. But again, these kids at high school, sometimes you know it's almost too late if they can't have that mentality of relax. Not relax, accepting coaching. You got to be coachable to play the game, right?
Yeah. And be willing to work for it too, man. You know, and you know, I tell some of my guys this, man. You know, this game will bring you many friends. This game will bring you. You will brush shoulders with a lot of people in the game, man. But you got to understand something. This game has turned into a business, and you can't go into it thinking it's a friendship with this. Like, when you step on that field, you have no friends. They're opponents because – If the guys that always showed up friendly, those were the ones cheering us on the benches, man. I hate to say it like that. But
no,
you know what
right.
I'm saying? When you come there and you have a job and the intent to do, I'm here to win my spot, to earn my spot, and make my name. That's the goal,
hey,
you know?
Example myself. My roommate was Sherwin Sinche. Sherwin Sinche was from Curacao, and he was he was there a year and a half, maybe 2 years before I got there. But he was the darling, you know, the darling Caribbean guy, you know. And I was so mad because I came there later. I wanted that spot. And we were roommates. Yeah. We never talked baseball, T, because I look at him as that guy who have my spot. You know, we can have a drink here. We have a little party here. But when it come around baseball, and we weren't friends. He would never tell me my mistake. I never told him his mistakes. I hate to say it, but that's just – it's a dog-eat-dog world, you know?
Literally.
And
literally.
2 years later, I got to play center field. He moved right field. That was my – that was like step one to my satisfaction. You understand? I got what I wanted in a sense.
Yeah,
and it sounds
selfish.
When other people hear it, they might say, man, that was cold. No. That's your motivation. That's what motivate you. You have to pick whatever it is to motivate. Tony has to pick whatever it is Tony has to motivate him to the next level. I had to do the same thing for me. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right, man. Because think about it. If you have that satisfaction of somebody being number one over you, what you in sports for, you know? Hey, I don't want to be number two. I want to be number one.
You know
so. Yeah, man. So, you know, Yeah, I definitely understand what you mean with that, and it's just a situation, man, where it's certain players is just cut from a different cloth, and that's just a natural to them, you know, just like a shark in the water. When they see blood, all they think about is eating, man, and that's the mindset. You have those players, you know, you definitely run across those players, but you know, it like I said earlier, the game is diluted, man, when it comes to those type of players we just mentioned, the ones with the excuses, the ones that's, you know, that try to find a reason to not, you know, go, you know, go, you know, fight with what they have to do, you know. So, yeah, man, I definitely agree.
And you know what, a lot of times they're looking for an excuse, you know.
Yeah.
And I would tell coach, they're looking, oh, if coach didn't, no. We're not your excuse. You're your own failure. You're your own success, you're your own failure. You've got all the opportunity that's given to you. Use those little, all the tools to become successful. So now if you get cut or you go to coach and coach say, well, I have to put this guy in front of you, you can't blame coach anymore. Coach give you everything that he asked of you. He asked you for a little thing, attention. I shouldn't ask you to love the game, because if you're there, you should be loving it. You know, I shouldn't ask you to love it. You know, and that's the whole thing about some of these kids, man. They want you to lead them to the water, man. No. I crack the door for you. You better kick it in. Kick it in. You know, I'm cracking it. And that's the same thing that what I believe. Like I said, I think coaches on his own, and I think he needs some other people to help him get the kids where they need to be. I think that's what it boils down to. Hey, I was thinking, man, I see one of the best, so far, best trade in the offseason for Major League Baseball is Juan Soto. Boy, feel at home in
New York. Man, he has been out, man. And honestly, man, I'm not going to lie. I'm honestly impressed with the Yankees in general. Like, I knew they had some playmakers, but it's a lot of young guys stepping up too, man. I know Oswaldo Cabrera, man. I actually played with his older brother, Lobaldo Cabrera, man. We call him Leo, though. But, man, both of those guys, man, I got to give a big ups to Oswaldo. He's been crushing, man, and making a name for himself. But it's wild when you watch guys start up. Like, I remember when a buddy of mine, Travis DeMere, he was with the Braves, and he was telling me, hey, man, we got this new guy, man. We got this young guy. He's about to sign a big boy check, man, with us. And he was talking about Ronald Acuna at the time. And look at him now. Like, you know, when you see certain players, you just know that they're the it factor, the wow factor, you know. And I remember Leo just, you know, reposting his younger brother when he was in minor league ball, and the guy was like, I'm talking about like 19, hitting like 30 plus bombs, 30, like just going crazy, like video game type style. And now he's, I want to say he's what, like 22, 23 or something like that, man, and just going off, man. He's doing his thing. So I just want to give a shout out to them too, man. Just, you know, you see the work being put in and you see the work coming out. You know,
like we always say, you put it in, you get it out. You know, whatever you put in, you put 100% out. And I think what I also look with the Yankees, or all of them, man, you could tell that they like each other. You know,
yeah,
you could tell they have fun.
Yeah.
You could tell that.
What about your guy though, man? Big boy.
Judge?
Yeah, man. What's up with him? What's going on?
Judge, he's going to break through. Judge always been a slow starter, man. He always been a slow starter.
Yeah.
When he get on a roll, be careful. So Stanton the same way. But Stanton is usually not in a slump because he's such a – he's a big guy, but he's have very short, compact. You know, like Judge have a longer swing than Stanton does. But they're gonna come through, man. You imagine they're struggling.
I think, to be real, man, you want me to tell you what I think it is? when you bring in certain guys and those guys show out, I feel like they're just adding a little bit too much pressure on themselves, man. You know, when Soto came in, he took the shine. Then you got these younger guys shining, like I mentioned, Oswaldo, you know. You know, and what's Buddy for Vertigo? Vertigo? Can't mention this now. You'll learn with me, I'm horrible with names. the guy from Boston, man. Yeah, man, the guy from Boston as well, man, the one that rocked the grills and the chains. They came in both. Yeah, they came in shining.
When you get guys that come in that they're hot, you know, they're young hot. When you're older guy, sometimes you take your time more. You don't feel pressure.
Yeah.
So it could be that they're putting pressure on themselves, and it could be like they're taking their time. You know, sometimes you got your position, you know what you're going to do, and if things are looking good, they just take their good old time and get themselves back into the groove instead of rushing.
Yeah.
If those guys weren't there, they would have had to, you know, be the guy. You know, now they got somebody that's the guy. Let me take my time. And it could be what you say, and it could be the other way around. You know, like I was telling you, sometimes it's hard to look at young guys that come in, and you're not going to outplay these. These guys have all this stamina, man. You just got to pace yourself. It's the same with LeBron right now. LeBron's 39 years old, still scoring 40 points, but he's not going on every game to blow it out the water. You know what I'm saying? He's taking his good old time and doing what he needs to do. So it's always, you know, as you get older, man, you just have to know your body. You know, like Dixon used to always make fun of me when I tell him I'm not playing anything over, you know, any over 40 games and stuff like that, over 40, over 50. I'm like, dude, I'm not doing that because I know me. I'm going to go ahead and try to die, try to run fast, all this stuff, and then tomorrow I can't walk, you know? It's funny, you got to just know the body you're in, know everything you do, and just compete in a way that you have to compete. That's all, you know. So when you got guys like Dodgers right now, look at the Dodgers. Dodgers look good, you know. Betts came out fast, you know.
Just to add on to that, man, like knowing the body you're in, man. Like you mentioned, it's hard when you play hard. You know, when you're a guy that plays the game hard, it's hard just easing into it. And for me, I feel like it would be so hard for me to go into a season and just easing it, taking my time with it, because that's all I know, like 100%. So it's just like, how do you adjust when you do have that mindset of just going 100% all the time, you know? Like, even with LeBron, you know, I noticed, like, even with LeBron, he's, like this season I actually seen him, like you said, ease into the game. But I've been watching him for 10+10. Well, how long? Like, how long he's been in the game?
20 years.
Almost 20 years. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, he's been doing that, and I know he can only allow what his body will allow him to do. But it's just a situation where, how do you tell yourself mentally, like, dude, like, just take it easy, you know, like, just ease into it, you know? That, you know, when you have that mentality.
Especially if you know that I have to slide. Say you're playing baseball, and you say, I got to slide to win this game. There's no way you're not going to do it. But your body knows you take it, but then your mind overtakes your body. You're like, man, I'm going in. Basketball, you know, when LeBron is playing ball, I guarantee you he got to ice his feet, man, because jumping, and, you know, his adrenaline get him to go one round. But when he's finished, when the blood stops flowing, man, that's when the pain comes in. You know, that's when everything starts coming in play. You know, so, man, you got
to. And that's why I got to give respect, too, man. My bad. That's why I got to give respect to Brady and those guys, man, because football is a straight contact sport. You know, you going at it day to day, and it's just like, man, some of those hits last a lifetime, you know. And man, you know, you live like Brady, and Brady literally had to get threatened by his woman you know, to for him to even consider slowing down, you know, and giving the game up. So it's tough, man. It's tough, but it's a different mentality. Like, if you train a wolf to kill, that's all he knows, you know. So if you're trained to go hard 24/7, like, how do you turn it off? Like, when these
you
guys
can't.
Retire,
I mean,
and they
not, if you're, not if you're a true athlete. If you're a true athlete.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when I was in the minor leagues with Orioles, there was a quarterback that used to play for the L.A. Rams named Roman Gabriel, right? And he was the owner of the team I played for. And T, that guy lift his pants leg up, man. And his knees were like a map. The surgeries that he had on his legs, man. People were like, man, this guy hardly can walk. You know? So it's just crazy how the beating that those football players take, man. It's really a lot of beating. You're right. You got to give those guys credit for. I mean, because when not only that. Nowadays, they're giving a quarterback a break, but when these guys throwing the ball and your arm is in the air and your sight, your ribs are wide open, what can you do? You know, what can you
do? For real. For real. And
you know more than I do because I've never played football, but you know the contact point of the game.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. And to a certain extent, when you dedicate your life to something so much, you become it. Like Mike Tyson. He is boxing. This dude, how old is Tyson? Like 50s, mid to high 50s?
Yeah, about 50.
And this dude really is about to hop in the ring. And I really feel like he's going to give Jake Paul a good run for his money, man. Because, you know, Mike, he don't care about all that extra stuff. And he really don't like fakers. You know what I mean? I feel like he really going to rock, buddy, man. He really going to drop
him. He's gonna hurt
him
real bad.
Yeah.
I know he is.
But then you gotta look at the mind frame and the mindset, man. When you do become something, you become it. You know, and that's the dark side of it, I feel like. For a lot of these athletes, when they do have to try to transition into retirement and putting the game down, where do they go? You know, you have some that go down the dark route and lose it. Do you have some guys that actually, you know, use that time to benefit and bring, you know, good to the world, you know, good investments, good ideas, whatever it may be, or just coaching, you know? So it's tough, man, and I feel for the ones that do get caught up on that dark end, you know, and it's tough.
Contact sport is something else. It's hard, and people can't get out of contact sport. You know, they're gonna get hurt easier than if you're not in contact. You know what I mean? So that's why it's hard. You know, like I said, and that same thing, Coach. When Coach called in earlier, I'm thinking about it now the work that we put in and the work that we know it takes to get to the level we're trying to get to. These kids have no idea. Either they don't have any idea or it's going to come easy. I don't know. But we're trying to instill them that it takes work. It's a 24/7 deal. If you're not physically doing it, you got to be mentally doing it. And be ready when your numbers call, you got to be ready. You know, that's the whole thing about what's going on. You know, hey, anybody else want to give a call, man, give us a call in at 661-467-2407. That's 661-467-2407. Give us a call, man. Have a conversation with us. You listen to CRS Radio, Sports Chat, and more. We're always here to help young kids, the youths all over the world, man. We make comments and we talk about stuff that we think that would help not just coaches, but it would help the young kids to understand that it's nothing comes easy, man. You got to work for whatever you need to work for. And in about 5 minutes, we're going to have a conversation with the smart people. I call them the smart people, the one that we got to ask these questions through outside of sports. You know what I'm saying? there's a lot of men, you know, growing up, man, you know, and you know this as a jock. You sometimes don't worry about the other small stuff because you so concentrate, and me, I'm talking about me, myself, so concentrate on getting the game right and getting everything right. Is after I got retired and I started saying, wait a minute, this is what's going on. This is what went on. You know, I hate to say it, but it is like that. You sit back and you go, man, I wish I'd known this. You know, I wish I'd known about that. But it is what it is. know, it's never, hey, like they say, never too late to learn, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's just a time to you know, I mean, I like you when you talk about retiring and what to do and what not to do. I'm glad I have the opportunity to show that I love the sport and show these young kids what the game should be like to be where you need to be. And that's what I wake up to every day, man, just to know that I'm going to hands in hand touch some of these kids and teach them the game. And it's like what Coach said earlier, he didn't know what a batting cage was. I think I used a batting cage in the island. I think it was one of the coaches built a makeshift cage in his yard. And every team, everybody was there because we never had that before. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
that was like, I would say about 2 years before I turned pro. So all the time I'm growing up, I this is crazy. We used to take, I don't know if I could give you the visual, right? We had a cord and a baseball bat, and we cut piece off the baseball bat, and we had a swivel on the tip of the baseball bat. Join that cord to the baseball bat, do another swivel, tie it on a baseball, screw it in and tie it on a baseball, and just swing that baseball around. And as it's swinging around, the other guy there trying to hit the ball while you're swinging it. When you hit it, you got to start swinging it again. You know, that was what we used.
We used to have one. It was called like a swing around or something like that. Swing around or hit around. It was something of that nature. I know back you could like strap it onto a baseball or a basketball post or a pole in the ground, and you spin it around, and once it unravels, you hit it and keep it going. And man, really, like Coach mentioned earlier too, man, I know growing up, man, I chased the grind myself, man. Like if I didn't have anybody, I would see how high I could throw the ball, how far I could throw the baseball, and I'd try to go catch it, man. And I'll go out there and hit around and just work on my swing, man. Even to a point, I had got some old mattresses. And I would, and I had a wiffle ball, and I would let it hang, and I would just hit that in the basement, just working my hands, just one hand drills, different stuff like that, man. Like I said earlier, it has to be in you, man. It can't be something that just pop here and there, or just click here. No, it has to be.
You have
in
to
you,
want.
Man.
You have to want. It. You're 100% right.
Yeah.
You have to want it.
Yeah.
And a lot of these kids don't want it. Well, you put it this way. They think they know what it means like to want it, but they really don't.
Yeah.
They really
don't.
And sometimes they will listen to us and say, oh, man, you talking to me? That's how it used to be back then. No, it's even worse now because the turnover in Major League Baseball is crazy. So if you can play the game, then you're going to get the opportunity, you know. You're definitely going to get the opportunity. So, you know, it's one of those things where you either want it or you don't want it, you know. We're going to change the beat a little bit, T. We're going to go over to and change the combo a little bit at the end of this intro. So we'll bring Ms. Rhoda Arundel on for as soon as we get on the other side.
Okay, perfect.
You're listening to Rafael Skeet on the Caribbean Radio Show with sports, chat, and more.
The sports chat is good, but now we're going for the more. So the more we have Ms. Rhoda Arundel. Ms. Rhoda Arundel, how are you doing this evening?
Good evening to you and to your listeners. I'm doing much better, thank you. And good to be here with you. First, before we begin, let me send my apologies on behalf of Lefana Sekou, who is the publisher of House of Nehesi Publishers, and he's still busy right now with another assignment, so he couldn't make it. And Fabian Badijo might be joining us also. Yes,
okay.
I just wanted to say.
You know, I was telling Tony we got the three-headed monster, so, I mean, we got one of the three-headed monsters. We'll be okay.
Okay.
So,
okay.
One of the things,
I'm the
Rhoda, man. Rhoda's on
there. Hey, how you doing? How you doing?
Hi, Tony. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
So, Rhoda,
how are you?
because Tony was trying to put me on the spot, asking me questions. So I you know, I had to dance around a little bit. You know what I'm saying? I was telling him, you know, growing up, you know, I was a jock, so a lot of the social events I wasn't too interested in. You know what I'm saying? But as I got out of the game, I started doing a lot of reading and started doing a lot of listening. And one of the subject that I think about 8 years ago, I went to St. Martin, and a gentleman named Jeffrey Richardson stopped at the border and asked me to take some pictures of him. And I took the pictures of him, and he said, "This is about the Concordia, the statue of the Concordia." I still didn't know what it meant, you know. So after a while, I started checking out what it meant and stuff like that. But what piqued my interest is I was it was a piece that Lasana, it was LinkedIn. And I was reading a piece, he had a long piece, and I didn't even know it was 1848 is when the truth started. I did not know that. So explain to the listeners, this is more about the Caribbean island, not just the Caribbean islands, about the French and the Dutch making decisions for the island folk, in a sense. That's how I look at it. Give us something. Let us know, and myself and the listeners know a little bit about the Concordia part.
Okay. Could I take 5 minutes to do like a how do you say, rewind to get to that point, if you don't mind?
The table is yours.
Because I want to put it in context. There's something that really, that's an important event that happened this week. It was at the United Nations on last Monday, actually, on the 25th of March, where the International Day of Remembrance for Victims of Slavery and the Slave Trade was observed, right? And this is important to the Caribbean region, and the keynote speaker at the 46th, I believe, General Assembly meeting at the United Nations, the keynote speaker was Sir Dr. Hilary Beckles, who is the Vice Chancellor of the University of the West Indies and overall campuses, but stationed in Jamaica. And he's also the chairperson of the Caribbean Reparations Commission, that is the body that is assigned by CARICOM heads of government to work out the logistics on the ground, the how with the people on the ground in the Caribbean and how to pursue reparations. So you have to understand that. That is important because on the 26th of March, which was the day after the United Nations meeting, the Caribbean Pan-African Network held another meeting, an online conference, and the pledge that came out of the meeting, actually before the meeting started, but at the end of the meeting, it was concluded that all efforts are going to be made to make sure that the rest of the Caribbean is decolonized fully. And this is important in the context of the Treaty of Concordia. That's why I try to set us up here. So there's this pledge by Caribbean heads of government, by Caribbean civil society, by government representatives on the ground in terms of national commissions, that we are working as a body to finally fully decolonize the region. And St. Martin, being one of those islands, there are 17 territories still left in the Caribbean that are not decolonized, right, that they are still colonies. And they come in different packages, so they have different constitutional design, but they're pretty much the same thing. They're all Caribbean colonies of European countries. So when you were asking about France and the Netherlands, there's also the United States of America, for example. We can speak of Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. And there's also the United Kingdom, right, so Britain, that has these other territories in the Caribbean. Now, to get to the one that you're asking about, in St. Martin after, you know, after the Spanish and the Dutch had fought a war for over 8 years, is important for the context of what Fabian and what Lasana was saying, that there was this war, and eventually the Dutch and the French, after the Spanish decided to leave St. Martin, the French and the Dutch would return, because they'd been fighting over this little rock and many of the rocks in the Caribbean for years. And whenever there's a war in Europe, and the spoils would go to the victor of the war, right? So if there's a war in the Europe and France, or in this case it would have been Spain and the Netherlands had an 80-year war, when the war is over, they would decide, well, the winner takes the spoils, which are these Caribbean islands. And in the case of St. Martin, after the Spanish left in 1648, the French and the Dutch returned to the island and among themselves decided that they would not fight each other anymore. They would, what they would say, they would peacefully coexist. And in order to mark that peaceful coexistence, this is in principle and in theory, because it was not peaceful in any way, but in order to mark that peaceful coexistence, they would sign a treaty called the Partition Treaty. And in the Partition Treaty, they would divide the island in north and south. So the French would occupy the northern part, which would be 21 square miles, and the Dutch would occupy the southern part, which would be the 16 square miles where you grew up, right? So that would mm-hmm. be, but if for your listeners, they need to know that it's a boundary in theory, right? There's a monument where you took the pictures, but in reality, there's no border, right? It's a one people that have lived even before the partitioning, because remember, the ancestors would have been brought here by the various European powers to work, you know, on these plantations. In the case of St. Martin, when the treaty is signed in 1648, the enslaved ancestors would have been referred to as property, right? So they were not among the free that would have been participating in this signing of a treaty to coexist peacefully. In fact, they were referred to as property. And that meant that the slaveholding Europeans, they would be able to take the enslaved African ancestors and move them among their various plantations on these islands. So in St. Martin, if you were a slaveholder and you had a plantation in St. Croix, or if you had a plantation in the north, or if you had it on another island and you needed manpower, you would simply pick up your property and put them to work in these various islands and these different plantations. So what Fabian and Lasana were saying, so if you think of 1648, the treaty is signed in 1648, and then comes emancipation by the British first in these cases, but then the French would follow in 1848. So that would be 200 years of so-called peaceful coexistence, but in reality a partitioning of the island for 200 years, where the African ancestors are referred to as property. And then 1848, the French would emancipate their slaves from their various colonial spaces, but the Dutch would do so in 1863. So there would be another 15 years in St. Martin where the entire population could not be emancipated. And what would happen on our little rock would be that the enslaved ancestors in the south would just run across the border, the imaginary border, risk their lives, risk a lot of things, because if the French were free and the British before that, it would have been in 1834, and that would mean they would find places like Anguilla, what we know today as the British Virgin Islands, the Tortola and those places, St. Croix. Our ancestors would have run to those spaces knowing that they could be free if they were to arrive there. And so what Fabian and Lasana have been saying, and a number of people in our circle have been writing about, is that how can you? So every year in St. Martin, for your listeners, recently it's been a new thing that the representatives of the Dutch and the French administrators on the island, so these are locally elected politicians, not the people in Europe, not France, not the Netherlands. These are the locally politicians. They would get together and say that they are marking the Treaty of Concordia, because that's the other name for the treaty, right? But in reality, it's called the Partition Treaty. And I want to emphasize that, because that's the point of the argument that Fabian and Lasana have been making, that how can you say you are commemorating the unity of the island's people if you are doing that by recognizing the partitioning treaty, which would have been dividing the island and the island's people, and the majority of the descendants of these people on the island were not free people at the time. So there's a hypocrisy there, and that was the main point.
Let me ask you this. Again, why is it that both sides of the island are still participating in this treaty when they should more or less educate the people of why, and that, you know, what, why the treaty was why it's not, you know, the way things should be right now? Why are they, you know, like participating in it? It's, to me, it's like a photo op. Why are they completing the photo op every year?
Well, that's a very good question, and to be honest with you, I wouldn't claim to want to speak on behalf of these people, but I'll tell you what has been the trend, and what, because it's, like I said, it's recent, and I remember, you know, when I was in office in 2010, 2011, I think it was, I was invited to one of these things, and the similar arguments that I'm sharing here that Lasana and Fabian have been sharing, we sort of gave the same response. You know, we would not be participating because, you know, the contradiction, right? The contradiction, it doesn't make sense. But what has been happening more recently, and I think that's a very good question that you asked, because if you see the activities that are stepped up by both the Netherlands and France, but France has always had a stronger foothold in its colonies in the Caribbean, because their whole approach to colonialism has been one of assimilation. And so very early in the enterprise called the Republic of France, it made a position that France is indivisible, that all of France is one France. And so their policies are a lot more centralized compared to the Netherlands, which has had more of a center its administration in Curaçao in those days, the Netherlands Antilles, and the direct interference in St. Martin was more removed. And what we're seeing now is that there's a bigger push now to get more of a foothold, I would say, on the island in a number of areas, and a lot of the elected officials are also part of that strategy and that agenda, I would call it. So if you were to ask me why, you know, so they claim that they're celebrating the unity of the island, but in reality, when you look at the name of the treaty, and this is the argument both Fabian and Lasana have been using, it's a division treaty, it's a partition treaty. So you can say that you're celebrating the oneness of the people, but in reality, that's not what you're doing. What you're doing is helping the French and the Dutch to further divide the island.
Correct. That's what I was thinking. That's what I was thinking. I was saying you were telling the people it's okay. It's okay. It has been okay, and it is okay, when it's really not okay. So why not now start conditioning your people, your locals, to say, hey, we have to move in this different way to actually make things differently, or to combat the so-called treaty.
Well, if you were to think of it, because there are groups like our group and some other groups that have been over the years speaking up against this, right? And Lasana and Fabian being among the very consistent voices over the years. But what is happening, if you're paying attention to what's happening in the entire world, it's not just here. If you saw what happened in the British Virgin Islands a few years ago with the with the British government trying to do direct rule. And CARICOM had to stop, you know, put a stop to it, step in and say, no, that's not how it's going to work. So the direct rule threat comes every so often. But what is easier for European colonial powers to do with the remaining colonies is to get the local governments to go along, right? And so you're asking, why aren't they, like, telling the people we should be going in the opposite direction? I would dare say that they know that going in the opposite direction is the way to go for full liberation. They're aware of it. But just like in plantation days, you have to remember that those overseeing the plantation, while the slave master or the plantation holder would have been in Europe somewhere smoking a cigar somewhere on a porch overlooking his estate, the people that are actually running the plantation are the ones who are going to make sure that it stays intact, right? So the overseers, you have this in the United States, if you think of the history of the U.S. as well, right? The actual plantation owner doesn't have to be physically
present. Hold that thought. Don't go anywhere. Don't go away. You listen to CRS Radio with Sports Chat and More. You want to call in and be part of what we're talking about. There's a lot of people here listening. Call 661-467-2407. We got about maybe 15 more minutes or less, but you can call in at 661-467-2407, and you listen to Sports Chat and More.
You're listening to Rafael Skeet on the Caribbean Radio Show with Sports Chat and More.
So go ahead with your thought. I just wanted to make sure that we, you know, people know what they're listening to. So go ahead with your thought.
No, I was just saying, so that's been the argument, you know, that there are a number of people that are saying this is a contradiction. But what happens, and we're Caribbean people. We've seen this play out in different spaces in the Caribbean over the decades, that you get a group that are, you know, in the 60s would have been that big move for independence and we want to be in charge of our destiny, et cetera, et cetera. And so it happens like in a big wave and then it goes dormant for a while, you know, so that enterprise took place and it sort of like petered off. And then now you're getting these conversations again when you look at global politics, when you look at what's happening in Africa right now. You're also getting in the Caribbean a sense of Europe is trying to have a stronger foot in the Caribbean, in the region in general, but also because without
Why do you think that is? Without
these little islands, places like Britain, places like the Netherlands and France, they have no relevance in this region. They have no interest in this region. And so if they have possessions here, they can claim maritime space, they can claim airspace, they can claim the resources that are here in the region. You see what's happening now with Guyana having discovered, most people knew that was there before, but that oil now is a real thing to be pumped out of the earth in Guyana, and how everyone has flocked to Guyana and everybody is Guyana's best friend right now. But these islands are rich in resources, but they are also important strategic military bases, and that's an important thing to a lot of these powers. They have no relevance if they don't own property in this area. Pretty much it.
Which island you think is more like the big brother Caribbean island, where you could say people can look at for an example? Or is there any island you say, well, this island did X, Y, Z, so we should follow that blueprint? Is any island out there that you can name right now?
Each space has had its own history. And if we look at what's happening in Haiti, and I keep coming back to Haiti because it was intended and it is the agenda to make sure that everyone in the Caribbean understands that Haiti cannot be successful. That if it becomes a success story, then these islands, you know, would get ideas, so to speak, right? And it was the objective, and it still is today, to make sure that we are aware that Haiti cannot be a success. So that's number one. So if you're going to look at how to do a good revolution, we're going to show you that if you look at Haiti, it's not going to work. When you think of the different islands and how they went about it, you can look back to the days of, you know, the West Indian Federation, how that was put together, but always, always orchestrated by Europe and United States as an offspring of Europe, United States and Canada. It's not an innocent child either. But what they've been doing is, you know, creating a different formula. Look at what's happening in Puerto Rico, right? What was this, you know, what was discussed at the conference this week? Puerto Rico has had like 6 referendum on, you know, statehood and independence and the interference and the meddling and the way it is done, you know, how the government, how the United States moved into Puerto Rico. But you look at Hawaii, for example, with the United States. So you can see, if you look at the template over the years, that these little rocks in the sea, whether it's in the Pacific or the Caribbean Sea or whatever it is, that depending on who occupied it, who would be our example, there are no particular examples to follow. All you have to do, I believe, as a Caribbean society, is say that you want your freedom and fight for it. That's it. It's that simple. And every time a pro-independence movement seems to be gaining ground, you get outside meddling. So pay attention to what's happening in Puerto Rico right now. And I think from the U.S., you should be, like, paying attention to how now the pro-independence movement seems to be gaining ground again, and then watch what kind of policies are going to come out of the, you know, out of Washington towards Puerto Rico and how things are going to go there. Watch what's happening in the U.S. Virgin Islands and see how that is going to work out. These islands are going to have to demand, are going to have to count on each other, and I think that's what came out of the Caribbean Pan-African Network meeting this week, that we're going to have to band together, CARICOM in particular with its 15 member states, mostly sovereign states, are going to have to be the big brother as an organization of 15 sovereign states.
Do you think that the Caribbean islands have faith in movement that the United Nations will step in and help, or you think it's just more like I said, a Christmas tree? You know, you plug it in, it's pretty. You plug it out, it's over. So you think United Nations is doing anything at all, or it's just there as a name?
Well, but who is the United Nations, really? Who are the major funders of the
European
United Nations? Okay, there you go. United States and the Netherlands and Germany, et cetera, right? These are the major funders. And so, yes, the good thing with the United Nations is that you have more, you know, African and Asian countries that are now members. And so a lot of lobbying takes place as to whose cause gets supported, et cetera. Look at what's happening now with Gaza and Israel at the UN. I don't know if you're aware of the vote. This was the first time the U.S. didn't actually use its veto power, right, on this last vote here. But it would have normally, you know, voted, that one vote in the United States would go against, that veto vote could go against all these other member states and their votes, and it would be, you know, case over. But this particular time, I think it was last week, that the U.S. simply abstained, and that was enough to make a different sound. But it's those bigger countries, those more powerful countries that have the ultimate say at the U.N., but I hear also, so I'm also hopeful that you're hearing a call for change at the UN, for change of structures. Dr. Beckles mentioned the call for change to the IMF and to the World Bank, and some of these countries are having a say. It's to be seen, but the power still ultimately rests in the hands of the powerful, the big ones, U.S.
Gotcha.
And Europe.
Hey, but thanks for coming on, man. I've learned. I know my listeners learn a lot. We still have the opportunity to talk. We still fail to talk about your new book.
We can talk about it another time.
Yeah, we can get to it. So I appreciate you and thank
thank Lasana and Fabian. Let them know that at least they tried to make it, and we appreciate them. And definitely we'll try to get the three-headed monster back on real soon.
I told Fabian, I don't know what happened, but he said he was definitely coming on. I sent him the reminder, and I think, you know, I don't know, maybe it slipped him. I don't know what happened, but but I'll tell him.
You guys are busy folk. You know, we're a little guys, so we understand.
No. Well, I know what I'm doing. I'm busy planning a funeral. You know that.
We all deepest sympathy from everybody. I was telling that Dixon was supposed to come, but Dixon had an emergency operation as well yesterday.
Right.
His fingers. So he said he's doing a lot better about it. He was supposed to come on, but he didn't. I think he was trying to take care of all that stuff. But we're going to have us. We'll be stronger, better next week. We'll be back on next week.
Okay.
But thanks a lot for coming on, and we'll definitely talk
to
you. Thank you. Thank you so much, and we appreciate your knowledge and the information. Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, that's what we do, man. We speak sports. We speak everything else that goes on around the world, because sports is not – just the only thing. I want to let you guys know that Iowa beat LSU, so they're going to the Final Four. Next week, we're going to have Mr. Carl Nickel. He's a former Major League catcher for Baltimore Orioles and I think Houston Astros. Good guy. One of the guys that when he talks, you actually listen. He work a lot with a lot of young MLB players and prospects and different stuff. And this guy is I can't wait to talk to him next week. So I'll have to see you guys next Monday. Again, I'll call in at 661-467-2407. So if you can write that number down, and I'll make sure I have that number for next week. I think you're going to have some questions for Mr. Carl Nichols next week. We didn't have a chance to speak with Mr. Benny Castillo. He didn't make it this evening. We'll try to see if we get him back on another section and another program. We're also trying to get Ms. Vanisky. She's a head coach for Texas Southern basketball. We're going to try to get her on as well. So I couldn't get her on because I think when I was trying to get her, she was still having, you know, their games at night. So I'm going to touch base and see if I could get her to come on live and have a conversation with us and let us know what's going on in the college women's basketball world. I'm interested to know how it works. I think she's in her third season with the Texas Southern basketball. I want to say her second season. Next year is going to be her third season. I think she's going to have a blast the third year. Because usually, as a new coach, a new head coach, it takes you, I would say, your fourth year is when things start falling in place. Because don't forget, your freshmen start becoming seniors. So it's going to be a good thing to know that now she's having her own people in there. Because when she got in there first, she's coaching other coaches' recruits. So in her fourth year, she'll have her recruits and her recruits to start being freshmen, juniors, sophomore, and seniors, so she could implement programs. So we're doing good, man. This is our fourth week back at CRS Radio. Loving it. It's fun. Mr. Reed, I texted him earlier. I texted Mr. Terry Reed earlier. I said, man, we had technical difficulty last week, man. I'm hoping it doesn't happen this week. But I think he trusts that it would work. And I feel good about everything. Doc, you know, it's a pleasure being on the platform. So we're glad to be here, man. And we're going to make sure that everybody enjoy our program. Our program is going to get better and better as we go. We're going to make sure that we get the right people. Off platform is not just for the big guys. We want to have any and everybody that have something going on. They can call in. They can have conversation. It's almost like sitting on the around a table and just having conversation. This is what I want the program to be, that when you call in, you're very comfortable having a conversation. You don't have to be a professional athlete to have a platform.
platform. You have a platform here anytime. Anytime we're on and you call at 661-467-2407, you got us, man. And thank you so much. Guys, next week, same time, same station.
You're listening to Rafael Skeet on the Caribbean Radio Show with sports, chat, and more.